Welcome to the New Zealand Initiative podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and today I'm joined by Holly Gooch and Izzy Bremner. Now, Holly and Izzy are involved with something called the Hyphen Project, which has to do with education for neurodivergent students, I believe. Holly, do you want to just give us a bit of an introduction as to what the Hyphen Project is and what its aims are?
Sure thing. So I was motivated to do something about supporting learners who were neurodivergent from the time that my son first had his first encounter with the mainstream education system in kindy. So that was probably about 18 years ago. And what I found is that the mainstream education system was just not designed for learners who are wired differently, whether that be through being gifted or through being autistic, through having ADHD or having learning differences like dyslexia or dysgraphia, which is a difficulty with maths. And so I explored what we could do about the problem. And we've come up with the Hyphen Project, which is a talent incubator for 16 to 19-year-old teenagers who are talented and neurodivergent and have not got on well with the mainstream education system. And our plan is to work with them for 6 months and help them transition into the workplace or further study or even to self-employment perhaps, depending on what their area of passion and interest is.
Fascinating. And I'd like to start really by exploring a little bit more what it's like for people who are perhaps not the norm in our school system, because of course the school system, like any large scale system, is designed for typical people perhaps. And we're really pleased that you could join us, Izzy, because you're a fairly recent graduate of our school system. I think you're doing your master's in economics at the moment, but it sounds as if you've come straight through the university system. So you've probably got fairly recent recollection of school. And it sounds as if, from what Holly has told me, that you're pretty good at things like maths and physics, and so you weren't quite the typical student. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I feel that I wasn't the typical student in quite a few ways. I was really good at communicating. I really enjoyed reading and learning about whatever I could learn about. Me and my mother had a Friday night routine where we would go to the National Library in town because I had basically finished all of the books in my local library. And I would get out 30 to 40 books every week on whatever topics interested me and read my way through them during the week. And then I would put together little presentations on them for my friends and family on the things that I'd learned. So I taught myself hieroglyphics. I learned all about Albert Einstein when I had an obsession with E equals MC squared. I love maths and physics and science. I love understanding the world around me to that high degree that you can only really do when using complex mathematics. And yeah, I think I really enjoyed those aspects of learning.
It sounds to me as if you should have been the dream student. I mean, what teacher wouldn't love to have a student who reads 30 to 40 books a week? I mean, wow. So tell us, what was it like for you at school? You encountered some challenges?
Yeah, I would say that it started out not great and got worse. So initially, as a very young child, I noticed that none of the other children seemed to have the interest that I did in understanding the world around them. They seemed to be mostly interested in playing games of pretend, which I completely didn't comprehend why that would be interesting. I was like, but we could be learning hieroglyphics, guys. Like, which doesn't go down well in, you know, your normal new entrance classroom. So I really struggled to relate to my peers. I didn't understand the things that they were interested in. They didn't understand the things I was interested in. So I was quite socially isolated from a very young age. Additionally, I had a lot of problems with being really limited by the classwork. So if I'm given, I mean, I was reading 30 to 40 books from about probably year 4 or 5. So And I was reading at a very high level before then as well. And so when you're given like the little picture book that a kid is supposed to read in class, and 5 minutes in and I've finished the picture book and this is supposed to take an hour, what do you do with me? Right? Most teachers would kind of be annoyed that I had finished so quickly, sort of put me off in a corner in the classroom and tell me to entertain myself without distracting anyone. Right? Which is even further socially isolating. And I remember being taken away for like reading tests and things. And most kids would be taken away for these reading comprehension tests and it would take 10 minutes. But for me, they had to start at the normal, 6-year-old level. And then I was reading at high school level. And so I would do every reading test that they had available. And it would take like 2 or 3 hours as this teacher was like, well, you're really good at this one. But they didn't believe that I would be that good, so they didn't skip any. So they would just pull me out of like whole days of school to do tests that should take 10 minutes.
It's
I
hard to
was
know why they'd
also.
bother testing you at all
I know.
with the reading skill you obviously had. So,
Yeah.
and I guess there's a difference, obviously, between intellectual development and social development, right? So,
Definitely.
when there are students who are like you, you might be normal in terms of your development of your social abilities, but way ahead with your intellectual abilities. So they can't just put you in a high school because then you'd be out of your depth socially.
Yeah.
And yet, it's, as you said, isolating to be in the primary school socially. For other reasons, so.
I think it's isolating socially anywhere. Like you said, I don't think there's a good option in our mainstream education system. New Zealand, other countries do have a tendency to kind of put kids forward ridiculous sort of amounts of years, which is where you get those stories from the US of kids who have graduated college at 16 or gone to medical school and finished by 21 or something like that. But New Zealand takes, they sort of value that social interaction a little bit more highly. And so they try to keep you within your year as much as possible. So there was talk of putting me up years, I think, when I was younger, but it never really came to fruition because I was essentially the teachers were like, well, she's struggling so much socially already. And she is like 4 or 5 years ahead of her school peers. So it wouldn't be that much better if we put her up 1 year anyway. And then there's also the element of I had really high talents in some areas, but really, really strong weaknesses in other areas, things that simply didn't make sense to me. But a lot of those things were things that functionally didn't make sense to me. And so I refused to kind of do the work. So everything had to make sense to me. So, for instance, a big part of maths in primary school is when they get you to do your basic facts, where you're doing like your 2 times table and your 3 times table. And I was like, I don't understand why I have to memorize these. I can work them out each time, and it's not going to take me that much longer. And it doesn't make sense that I should have to know these off by heart and do them in this speed test because I don't see the reason for that. And they were like, they'll be useful later. And I said, how? How will they be useful later? When will I use them? I don't understand the usefulness of this skill that you're trying to make me learn. And so I would just sit there and doodle on my tests.
And of course,
And
for a
then I
typical
remember.
student, it is really important for most kids to learn their times tables because otherwise they suffer from excess cognitive load when they're trying to use their multiplication skills for other more advanced
Yeah.
purposes.
And my thing was always, I'll learn it when I need it, right? Right now, you're teaching me a skill that I don't feel I need. And so I'm not going to learn it. But I was also quite stubborn. And so I had a tendency where the teacher would be like, well, you're just refusing to do them because you can't do them. That's why you're not doing them. And I said, no, I'm not. And she said, no, you can't do it. And so the next week, when we did our basic facts exercise to see how quickly you could do the sheets, instead of doing one sheet in the allotted 5 minutes, I did all of them. And I remember my teacher got really angry at me because it was all that, like, if you did a sheet, you would get a fruit burst. And she said, I can't give you 5 fruit bursts. Everybody else will get angry. And I said, but I've earned them. I did the sheets in the time period and I earned the fruit bursts. And anyway, you said I couldn't do it and I showed you, didn't I? And she was just like, well, you're not getting the fruit burst because you must have cheated somehow. You
So
must have cheated.
there's a thank you for that story, Izzy. And there's some things that come out of that that are really w worth exploring. I mean, I want to ask Holly, in a minute, what the Hyphen Project aims to do for students like you, Izzy, and students with other kinds of neurodivergence, and not all of them, of course, have the kinds of intellectual capacities that you obviously did. But one thing that that story really highlights to me is how we need to prepare teachers better for a range of different kinds of students that they're likely to encounter. Instead of getting angry with a student for, you know, doing five times as much as is expected, there should be obviously a path laid out that you can follow when you have a student like that. Holly, what are your reflections on Izzy's story? I'm interested to hear from you.
So I think Izzy's story really encapsulates how confusing it can be both for the learner and for the teacher in these situations. So as a learner, it's very hard to comprehend why the hard things are easy in school and the easy things are hard. So take someone who's got ADHD, sitting on the floor and focusing, being able to work on a task that doesn't have anything inherently exciting or motivating in it, for the main reason just because you have to, is really difficult for a person with ADHD who needs lots of stimulation and reward. But at the same time, those other things can be really easy. So a lot of these learners are fantastic blue sky thinkers. They're interested in questions of philosophy at a really young age. They love debating and arguing for the sake of exploring ideas, not to be right. So this presents a really complex picture for teachers. And absolutely, their training hasn't equipped them for that. And That's a real pity, but it's also a real challenge for the teacher training programs as well. I know they've got a lot to fit in. And so that's why we came up with the alternative, which was a program that learners can attend instead of school. So they can be there full time and they will be supported in a neurodivergent friendly environment. So that means also removing some of the sensory stresses that lots of these neurodivergent people experience in school. So
the wonderful modern learning environments with,
absolutely,
with 120 kids and five teachers and a lot of noise a lot of the time.
Yep. That's the opposite of what these learners need. They need a more controlled environment, they need fewer people, and they need to know those people really well and know that they can be safe in that environment. A lot of these learners struggle with some of their social and emotional development. So when we look at building skills, those are the kinds of skills that we're focusing on rather than rote learning, you know, mathematics, for example. And so in our program, we'll have the capacity to individualise. So for our pilot program, we're wanting to have six learners and there'll be a team of five people supporting them. And we'll start off with a hui, with the learner, their whānau, anyone that's important to them, specialists in the area that they're interested in. And we're also bringing in some specialists in gifted education from overseas. They're going to participate in those meetings. And in those, we'll discuss, sort of map out a career plan, a future pathway for each individual learner, about how they can apply the thing that they're really passionate about in a way that they can actually look after themselves and, you know, have a job and earn some money and live independently. And once we've done that, then we'll identify a specific project that they can focus on, so a passion project that will help kickstart that career. So it may be that they might make a prototype, or they could film a documentary and launch that, or it might be that they participate in as part of a team that's doing a startup innovation program, like a new innovation entrepreneurial initiative. And while they're working on that project, we'll help them build the skills that they need around executive function, around organising, around setting goals, around managing anxiety, taking up challenges, and also keeping themselves safe and managing their own energy. And we'll also give them a variety of different workshops. So some of these workshops will be to inspire them to get them to think beyond just the area that they're interested in so that they're always expanding their knowledge. Some will be to give them specific skills that are going to be useful for them either in life or in their particular projects. So things like managing a budget, how to communicate with people in a workplace, send a formal email, make arrangements to meet with someone and interact with them in those meetings. And some of the workshops will be around learning as well. So for learners, for example, who are dyslexic, they might not have ever been taught any, introduced to any tools that are useful for them to navigate through academia. And they might also not have had the chance to experiment with different strategies that they can use to help manage literacy.
It would help if we used the methods that are most effective for, in fact, teaching anybody to read. They're the same methods for dyslexic kids, even if they take it a little bit longer to do it. But unfortunately, we've used now for a long time, this is one of my little hobby horses, quite ineffective methods of teaching reading, which are not in keeping with the best scientific evidence on the matter. And consequently, a lot of the time, actually, I think kids are diagnosed as dyslexic when they just haven't been taught properly. Mm-hmm. I'm not denying that there are genuine dyslexics out there as well. In fact, having identified that, you'd use the same methods anyway.
Well, one thing that's really interesting with people who are neurodivergent is we all do this. We all assume everyone else thinks the same way as us for a very long time, and it takes quite a while to figure out that, oh, I actually do these things differently. But what happens along the way is if you're dyslexic, for example, then you develop all these coping strategies and these different techniques to be able to access literacy. And so we want to help our learners identify those strategies and realise that they're doing them, share them with their peers because they might be useful to them too, but also give them new ideas of things that they can try out because some strategies work really well for some people and others don't. So, for example, some people love electronic apps and so on like that. So if you give them a few of those, they're off. And other people really prefer to do things more manually. And so that's not going to work for them. So we need to play around and find out their own style.
Right, yeah. Now, you said that the Hyphen Project was a possible alternative to school for gifted and neurodivergent young people. What age groups are we talking about? Are you talking as young as 5 years old or?
No, just 16 to 19
years old. Oh, 16 to 19, yep. So very much that end of schooling. Yep.
So it's very much focused on what their next steps are, moving into their vocational pathway, which for many of them will involve university as well.
Yep.
But yeah, future focused, and they'll be able to leave school at 16 and then graduate into our program.
It sounds as if it's quite resource intensive. So how would, I mean, you're starting a bit of a pilot by the sound of it with half a dozen or so young people. Izzy, have you thought about how you might scale this thing? I know you're involved in the governance of the project, aren't you? You're part of the board for it.
Yeah, I am.
So what do you think about how you'd expand this kind of approach so that it was feasible to do it at large scale? And you're a budding economist, so you'd understand the difficulties of scaling things like
Definitely.
This.
We have talked quite a bit about when we think economies of scale and that sort of thing will begin to kick in for these learners. But I think the pilot is definitely going to be the most resource intensive because we really don't know what to expect. We don't know what kind of difficulties we'll be looking at for these kids. Like, we've got a lot of literature, a lot of learned experience, but still that's nothing compared to having the kid in front of you and hearing their story. I believe that as you scale, it'll definitely still be resource intensive compared to normal school, but that's by design. We want our kids to get to know the people around them and to be able to rely on the presence of a couple of key people in the program, knowing that those people will be there, will be a real comfort to them in terms of the environment that they're in. From there, it's just about working out exactly how many sort of kids student to teacher ratio is an educational term, but it still applies in our sort of alternative scenario. So I think Holly would have the numbers.
I think it's 48. I think 48 is going to be our magic number.
48
for
kids,
one program.
With how many educators?
So if we had 48 learners, we're sort of wanting to have a ratio of one person to six people max. Now, bear in mind that that means, so we're going to have a group that is a team that is from the Hyphen Project, so our team. So there'll be myself, Jane Dorzeman, who's going to be our wellbeing lead, and we've got some navigators who are the ones that are going to do the one-on-one coaching. We'll also contract in NCA tutors to support our learners on any academic standards that they're wanting to complete. Some might not need to, but some will. And our learners will be enrolled into CUDA, and our NCA tutors will support them through Te Kura one-on-one.
Oh, I see.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that...
Just for listeners, that's what used to be known as the correspondence school, right?
Absolutely. Yep. They're also going to have a whole host of other people supporting them. So we're going to bring in guest lecturers. Each individual learner is going to have a youth mentor, so someone in their early 20s like Izzy, who's just been through an experience similar to them and gets where they're coming from. They'll also have an expert mentor from in the workplace who will help support them through their passion project. So if the person is passionate about entrepreneurship, well, then they'll be paired with someone who is, you know, out there doing the bizzo at that time. And they'll also have advisors come in particular parts of their project where they need it. So for example, say someone's quite creative and wants to do an art exhibition, then maybe we'll hook them up with a consultant who help them understand how you display artwork in a art exhibition, for example. So they might be someone from a museum or an art gallery. So there's going to be a lot of adults involved in the program, and but not all, just our staff.
Okay. Now,
but I think as well, an important thing to note is that these learners are learning a really important skill, and that they've got a lot of independent work time, which is when they will be setting up those meetings. They'll be going, okay, when's my youth mentor free? Because I want to see them a bit more this week, because I feel I need the support, or maybe I need more of a project support, so I'll see my navigator, right? And that's how the rest of us live in the real world. So yeah, it's really great for the teens to be learning those skills.
Indeed. And I can see immediately how this kind of program would suit a student like you were, Izzy, when you were at school. You'll have a lot of different kinds of students, though, right? By definition, you know, neurodivergent means all kinds of different things, and not all of those students will necessarily have the particular talents that you had, being able to read prodigiously and taking part in competitive physics and all of that kind of thing. You'll have some, perhaps, who are not very motivated. Do you include in your ambit students who may have had real behavioural problems, and how would you handle that in an environment which really seems to rely on quite a lot of independence and self-motivation?
So I think one important thing to note is that I sound really well-read and positive now because I'm out of high school and I've exited the schooling system and I control my own calendar, and I've put in place a lot of really good strategies and had years and years of support and therapy. But if you had talked to me when I was in year 12 or 13 of high school, I would have been unmotivated. Teachers would have noted me as having extraordinarily low attendance and being disruptive at times in class. A lot of these behavioural things are just due to people not understanding these kids.
Right.
And exhaustion. Izzy, maybe you can talk to some of the exhaustion that you had around.
So when I was in high school, everything was overwhelming. The lights were overwhelming. I hate those fluorescent lights that seem to be everywhere these days. I found socially interacting really, really overwhelming, and I didn't like it when people touched me. So just making my way through the corridors in between classes was overwhelming and exhausting. I would get home at the end of the day, having walked home with my backpack, and I would open the front door, close it behind me, and fall asleep in the hallway. And my mum would come home from work an hour or two later and find me passed out in the hallway asleep, just because of the pure exhaustion that had come from just a normal day of school.
Right. But so to come back to the question then, how are you set up at this environment to take in kids who are perhaps like that, who are, for whatever reason, lacking in motivation? And sometimes it's because, like Izzy, they were just basically not served well in terms of their talents. Mm-hmm. Others do have, you know, their neurodiversity itself manifests in behaviorally challenging ways. So I'm just wondering how you balance that against the desire to have them independent and the necessity for them to be self-motivated.
So there's quite a few things around that. So first of all, our program is designed so that learners can go at the pace that is going to work for them. So it's possible for our learners to finish our six-month program and they might have achieved their goals, which could have been around actually getting motivated and identifying what it is that they're passionate about and doing something, completing a project which demonstrates to them their own talents and gaining some self-confidence from that. They may then want to come back and do another round where they do a more challenging project that is on a slightly different vein and pick up some other skills and focus on some other skills, maybe add in some more academic qualifications that they didn't do the first time round. For other learners, so for example, Izzy might have been one of those, just doing the six-month program might be enough to transition them into university or employment. The other thing that's really important to note is that the projects themselves can be scaled to what's going to work for those learners. And because we're small, we've only got a small number of people and we've got a lot of adults working with them quite closely, we've got the opportunity to individualise and to monitor where they're at really closely, and so that we're always managing where we can expand and extend them and where we need to pull back and make sure that they regain that trust in adults that they might have lost through the schooling system. The other thing that we do is mental health is a really big issue for our neurodivergent learners, particularly by the time they've got to teenage years. They've usually had a rough couple of years through the high school system. And so some of the things that we set up are designed so that mental health and wellbeing is an everyday activity in our program. So for example, we're going to set up very bad day plans. So a lot of kids don't go to school if they're having very bad days. Our plan is we have a plan for when you have a very bad day so that you can come to the program and have your very bad day there and that we know how to respond to it. For some kids it means they need more attention, for others it means that they just need to be put somewhere quiet with something calming to do, and they all have different needs in that regard. And by doing so, we're also training them about how to recognise their own signals that they're about to, you know, have a meltdown, and also what the proactive steps are that they can do to either prevent it or actually deal with it when it happens. And that's perfectly normal and okay. We're also, a lot of our workshops are around some of those skills. So for example, we're going to do some regular activities. So we have whānau hui each week, which is everyone in the cohort will get together and discuss anything that needs discussing around problems that are raised and so on. So they'll all learn how to run a meeting and how to express, you know, how things are going and things they might want to change. We also have whānau hangs, which is an afternoon where we do social activities. And sometimes we'll need to prepare for that. It'll be like having a conversation. So today we're going to be doing Dungeons and Dragons. How do you feel about that? You know, are you nervous about what are you going to do when you come in and someone says hi and you can't think of what to say to them, things like that. We've also got our whānau lunch where we practice doing social eating. And so saying a karakia, practicing having conversations about various different things and preparing food for others and serving it and so on. The other thing we do is whānau mahi, which is once a week everyone gets together and does all the housework around the premises. So a lot of these life skills and social skills are going to be built into some of these activities, and doing so really explicitly is going to be necessary for a lot of these kids. For some reason, we often just expect kids should pick these things up by osmosis, but for many of our neurodivergent learners, that's the kind of stuff they actually need lessons in and actually want help with. They're not so worried about some of the academic stuff.
I mean, it sounds to me like a very well thought through program, taking into account all of those things that you just said about the really building the community and building the skills to take part in what for many people are everyday activities, but for some people are more challenging. But what are you going to do, assuming you demonstrate success, and I've every reason to think you will, when your doors are bashed down by thousands of people with this need?
Well, we'll be really excited if that happens. At the moment, we're just really working towards getting 6 learners. So, yeah, that's a really interesting question. And we've thought really hard about our principles in terms of, to us, it's really important that the program's strength-based and individualised. And we don't want to move away from that. We don't want to be focusing on, having a set program and this is what these learners, putting them into, this is the science group, this is the entrepreneur group, and you're all going to do this, anything like that. The most important thing about this program is being able to individualise. So it's always going to be resource intensive. It's going to be expensive to run. Parents aren't going to be able to fund it all themselves. We're going to need some extra support. So, yeah, we've had to think really carefully about what are those key things, what don't we want to be doing. So we're not wanting to have, cohorts of several hundred. We're wanting to make sure that everyone's part of a group of 6 and connected with the group of a dozen is kind of our ideal.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think as well, we want to build our hyphen project umbrella so that while a bunch of people are running the program, there are also people who are working on creating more resources for kids who cannot necessarily come in the program right now, who are on a wait list, who are too young. There's so many reasons why it might not work out or are just not in, initially we're in Auckland. If you're not in Auckland, then that's going to be a problem, right? So creating resources that those kids can use to try and improve their well-being while still outside the program and educate both schools and parents and just the public. So many people don't understand neurodiversity. They especially don't understand the crossover between being neurodiverse and being talented. They see that you're really good at one thing and assume that you're really good at everything else, which can leave you a bit in the lurch. So I think just educating the public, educating everybody that we meet and being like, hey, want to learn more about the Hyphen Project? Here's our business card and brochure. And, I think that that's going to be massive for us, is trying to help the community that is allowing us to run this program as much as we can.
Well, brilliant stuff, both of you, and all power to your collective arm. And just as a final thing, Izzy, I can't help wondering what your ambitions are. You've obviously accomplished quite a lot already. Here you are sitting on the board of this project. You're doing a master's in economics. You're clearly pretty good at maths and physics. What are you going to do with your talents and your abilities as you move ahead into full adulthood?
It's kind of hilarious because those things have all happened quite accidentally. For me, I'm really focused on, I finish university in June, so I will have my degree at that point, and I've already been working as a research assistant for a private consulting firm, and I've found that the pace of private consulting really works well for me, and I find the work really, really interesting. So I'm hoping to kind of move into that field once I've graduated. I still help out as much as I can with competitive physics in New Zealand. I mentor a lot of young people through physics, and I engage with a lot of schools where I can to try and bring the physics word. And yeah, I'll continue to work with the Hyphen Project, both as a trustee, but also I'm really excited to have our first sort of couple of cohorts and be a youth mentor and be able to kind of use the fact that my experience in the education system, which was such a negative part of my life, and be able to kind of say, okay, this is no longer just a negative thing that happened to me. It's a thing that I'm able to kind of put out there and explain to people and use for some good, to explain why we need the Hyphen Project, to be able to communicate the skills that really got me through it to the people who need it the most now. I think that's a really, really important part of my ongoing sort of dream for society, because so many of the things that got me through mainstream education, I lucked into. I had excellent parents who were willing to absolutely go to battle with the school for me. And I found competitive physics, which turned into a real safe place for me. And a lot of kids just don't luck into those things. So I want to make sure that neurodivergent teens like me, like I was, don't have to luck into the things that I lucked into, that foundation is built for them, that we're there for them, and they don't need luck. They can just get an education and go forth into the world like we expect of anybody else to do.
Well, thank you very much, Izzy, for joining us today. And thank you, Holly. And look, all the very best for the Hyphen Project. And perhaps when you've had your initial run with your six young people, we'll have you back to hear about how it's gone. So
awesome. Yeah. If anyone listening wants to give us some money or funding, is interested in the Hyphen Project, go look at our website. It's just thehyphenproject.org. We're super keen to hear from anyone, even if you just want to see if there's a neurodivergent kid out there who you can help out with your particular expertise. We're super keen to hear from people.
And can I just add too, just off Izzy's point around luck and privilege, we are determined that all of the talented neurodivergent learners in New Zealand have the opportunity to experience success. And that includes Māori, it includes Pacifica, it includes girls who are often not picked up as being neurodivergent or gifted, and it includes people from lower socioeconomic groups, which is why we really want to be able to offer scholarships to our learners as well.
Wonderful stuff. Thank you both very much for joining us. This is the New Zealand Initiative podcast.